Good afternoon. Welcome to Biz Talk, believing is seeing talk radio, where we walk the talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Ken Huebner. And that's it. Oh, and guess what? We're having a deliverance show today. Nothing to do with the movie anything spooky, but it's in honor of Aaron, who comes up with our words every day, who is probably in the hospital somewhere in the process of delivering a baby with his wife right now.
Huh.
Yes, I'm doing Facebook at this
time. you just launched right into that.
And it's like, I did, didn't
yes,
I?
Yes, yes. I was waiting on some comedic timing, you know, like the
Sorry.
Deliverance show. But no, that was okay.
I'm just right to the point right now, I guess.
Yes. So we really, it's just us.
It's us.
Us and our guests.
This is the old school days.
It is. So we're back to the basics. And thanks for tuning in today, by the way. We really appreciate our listeners out there. We really enjoy having you around, because if it weren't for you, we wouldn't be here. We've got a great show for you. In fact, we are a little occupied with the fact that Aaron is becoming a papa, hopefully today or tomorrow. I'm not sure when it's all going to happen, but the process started last night, I think, right?
Yeah.
That's when they went in.
I'm assuming we would have heard by now if baby has arrived.
Yeah,
so.
So Katie and Aaron, if you guys are listening, we're definitely thinking about you.
Absolutely.
And praying that everything works out just absolutely peachy keen for you today. Our guest, David Berry, he's here, founder of Rule 13 Learning, rule13learning.com, and an author of a book called A More Daring Life. David, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me, Bob. It's great to be here.
And I screwed up. I should have introduced our second guest first. So that's what happens when I don't have people. All my people are not here.
The people.
Yes, I don't know what that means, but they're not here. Jennifer Rawson is here. She's founder of Style Your Life, and she's a stylist. I mean, well, is it a stylist? You call yourself a stylist? Yeah. I'm so excited. I love clothes. I don't know why. I just do love clothes.
Notice nobody commented on my style when
you're pretty Midwestern basic.
I am. Yes.
My father-in-law likes to say it's the man who makes the clothes.
Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
I can identify with that. That just means we're too lazy to go out and shop. But hey.
Walmart, Kmart, right?
You could put a spin on anything, right? Yeah.
So back to David. Thanks again for coming in. Rule 13 Learning, and that's the website name. Tell us a little bit about your company and what you're doing.
Well, Rule 13 comes from the game of golf. And for almost 8 years, I was the vice president for leadership development at TaylorMade Golf Company up in Carlsbad. And love the game, love being in that industry, and love having the chance to influence leaders at that organization and now in my own business. But Rule 13 in the game of golf is that you have to play the ball as it lies. And as I was hemming and hawing about what to name the company when I was just starting out, I kept coming back to this idea that the thing I love most about golf is that you got to go find it wherever you hit it, and you got to figure out a way to hit it again from that spot and hopefully make something good happen as a result. That takes skill. It takes a lot of creativity. But the first thing it takes is an acceptance of reality that I did put it here, and I have a choice in that moment to either kick it back out in the freeway fairway or the freeway, if that's where you're playing, or accept that this is a great opportunity for me to learn something new about this game and my ability with it, to get myself out of trouble, to reinvent, to be creative. And for me, that forms the backbone of a really important conversation about how we work with the difficulties of change.
Now, TaylorMade is the I'm guessing the nurturing and the ground where you learn the concepts that you're talking about here. Is that correct?
It was a fantastic proving ground to work on these issues and to help influence the people I was working with there.
And just for those that don't know, San Diego is the golf capital of the
golf
world.
Golf capital of the world,
other
absolutely.
Than Titleist, I think we have just about every major manufacturer here. And TaylorMade is one of the huge... By the way, do you keep in touch with them there?
I have some folks there
that
I'm still in touch with.
Is George Montgomery still around there?
You know, I know George Montgomery, but I don't know him from there. I know him from Cal State San Marcos, where
I
work on a project team together.
Is he doing something there?
Yes, he is.
He was a kick. I mean, I've interviewed him several times, and he's funny as all get out.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah,
really good.
I asked him once, how come such a young guy ended up at the helm of a company like TaylorMade? He says, let me tell you the story. I was a janitor there. And he said, I was cleaning up the boardroom on my second day, and I found some papers. He said, the next thing you know, I'm president of the company. money. That was his explanation.
That's one way to get it done.
I know. He's a he's a good guy. TaylorMade was a really good company, is a really good company, that one of the top in the nation. So the role that you played there was what, in you had a title of learning and what was it?
Leadership development. And organizational development. So what I've done is take that role and starting my own business with Rule 13 Learning. I work with executives and their teams on how to create cultures that are more meaningful for the human beings that work there every day, and how to help those human beings work with the inevitable changes that they're going to face and are facing each and every day, the changes that are required if they're going to grow their businesses from where they are to where they want to be. That's easy stuff to say and to talk about, but as every one of us knows, Aaron today, having a baby, that's a heck of a change in his life. Yeah. And there's no getting your arms around that or working with that until you're right in the middle of it. And what I work with leaders to do is get equipped so that when they're right in the middle of it, they know what to do, know how to respond, and can really rely on a foundation that they've put in place.
You know, you brought up a really interesting point about Aaron having a baby and getting your mind and arms wrapped around the whole concept, just like leadership. What boggles my mind is we've been having babies for quite a while in the world, right? Nobody's written a really good manual for it. Still to this day, parents that are still questioning, still wondering,
right,
still anticipating.
Right.
Same thing with leadership in companies.
Correct.
I mean, we've been doing that for centuries, leadership in the military, governments, politics, and also in business. And nobody's come up with the definitive leadership manual.
That's why a lot of really smart people say that the most important thing a leader can do is start with understanding themselves. That the leadership manual is the one written of, about, and for you. That is to say, who are you? What do you believe in? What's the value system that drives you? What are your strengths? And knowing your strengths, how do you plug them in to offer the best you have for your organization? But most importantly, when you know your strengths, you should also know the other side of it, which are the weaknesses or areas that get you in trouble, and therefore can build a team of people to help you accomplish the great things that you want to do.
So it's not a mass market kind of product when you're delivering information like this for leadership.
Not at all.
It's mass customization.
Because
it really has to do with each individual. And that's why there's no definitive manual for everybody to follow. You have to go in there and do the evaluation work so you know what to guide each and every individual on, correct?
Would that be a way to say it? It is a good way to say it. It's a bigger, more holistic, and more personal conversation. There is no off of the shelf.
Which is why you're doing what you're doing.
Absolutely.
At Rule 13 Learning, rule13learning.com. And we're going to talk about the book, A More Daring Life. You can get it at Amazon. David Barry is here. He's founder. You're listening to Biz Talk, the Believing is Seeing Talk radio show where we walk the talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Ken Huebner.
We'll be right back.
I love it.
Welcome back. Thanks for tuning in today. You're listening to Biz Talk Radio, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio, where we walk the talk. We're broadcasting today from the ESET Studios, ESET Internet Security. Do more. And if you want to catch a podcast of our show or on Facebook, you could do either. You can get a podcast by going to ESPN1700.com. Check out today's show after we're done, or you can go back and listen to any of our past show. There's a whole library in there of some great shows. I'm Ken Huebner.
I'm Bob Ryan. Glad to have you with us. By the way, I can't help this. That was a baby song, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we need to play Havin' My Baby.
Havin' My Baby.
Yeah, the rendition by the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. That's my only, it's a baby joke and a Mormon joke too. But my other Mormon joke is I went to concession at the coffee and tea concession. That's the Tabernacles.
Good. Yeah. How's that working out for you?
Long lines.
And I love you Mormons, right? I mean, come on. There's good people there. I don't know where we're talking about. Why were we talking about
babies.
Mormons? Oh, babies. Yes. They have
politics
babies.
And religion, I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, all the...
Aaron says I systematically offend everybody, and now he thinks I've offended babies. So I don't know why. But anyhow, we have the founder of Rule 13 Learning, and the website is rule13learning.com, and the 13 is the numeral 13.
Correct.
That has to do with the rule in golf that you play it where it lies, right?
That's right.
And the book, A More Daring Life, the subtitle is Finding Voice at the Crossroads of Change.
Yeah. So Ken made a comment or a question during the break that's right down the middle of the plate on this, right? That to have a bigger conversation about change takes courage. And so to lead a more daring life is to lead a life where you're actually able to do the work of examining who you are and being definitive about what you stand for as a leader. To lead a more daring life means that you have to willingly connect with other people in a gracious, egoless, humble, vulnerable way to help them feel connected to you authentically. And then together from that foundation, you can go do amazing things. You can go create and explore possibilities that are the very things that are going to actually move the organization forward.
So a lot of people get up to leadership positions in companies by default. You know, they start at a company, their boss moves on, they get promoted, and they finally reach their point of incompetency, right? The Peter principle?
That's right.
Where they can't do anymore, so they just get stuck there, or they stay there. This seems to me to be the kind of thing that would be part of the growth process in good companies, which is what I hear you saying. That the companies that hire you to do this, this becomes part of the culture as somebody's advancing to help them identify the kinds of things you just mentioned. Because as you're talking about the leadership qualities that somebody needs to function effectively, there are things that I'm thinking people don't gravitate towards, like knowing what you believe in. Right? I mean, other than your belief system in your faith in God or whatever that is, there's probably a lot of that that's not easily definable for people.
Well, absolutely. And I think that's why what happens so often is that leaders, managers of people actually forget that first and foremost, they and everyone else around them is a human being. That we're supposed to have it all figured out, and knowing that we don't, not to mention being stressed by the crazy immediacy of the world that we're in and the speed and complexity of change, our field of vision tends to narrow down to this very, very, very small piece that we can only see the very the thing right in front of us, and so we react to that. Developmentally, we need leaders in these roles who are willing to say, and this has helped me thrive in a 22-year marriage and with my three children and in all of my relationships, be able to say, I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know how we're going to do it. But what I do know is that if we activate all the creativity, imagination, energy of the people around here and get them connected to this vision, we can go do whatever we want.
Do you find the capacity for leadership varies greatly between humans? Or do you find that most humans have a capacity to develop the skills they need to be good leaders?
I absolutely think anyone can develop that capacity. If we redefine leadership less as being less about charisma, less about magnetism, and more about human connection and meaning. So if I'm willing to define really what I care about and the vision I'm trying to achieve, that's attractive to people. People want to be a part of something special, and someone who's willing to declare, I have something special, is going to attract really great people to them to go and do it. So old definitions don't serve us very well at a time when what really people are asking for is more meaningful opportunities to do great stuff.
You know, your subtitle, Finding Voice at the Crossroads of Change, I think in corporate America now, we are at a really interesting time with the voice of the women that are coming out in the Me Too and the Time's Up kind of campaigns. Do you see that in your corporate world? Is that a discussion that's happening in corporate America, or are we only discussing that on the news right now?
I think the discussion is getting underway, is my sense of it. I'm no expert, but what I think is happening is that there's a dawning realization that we need more people in the room. We need more people able to freely express who they are, what they believe in, and how they want to make a contribution to what it is we're trying to do here.
And what currently is holding people back from that freedom to express? Is it just the culture that's built into the company that says new ideas aren't welcome here?
Or? Yeah, and no culture says that. No organization says that.
Not out loud.
Every organization says that those new ideas are wanted.
Right.
But if we don't lead in such a way that makes that obvious, if we don't keep asking the question, we pat ourselves on the back when we ask it one time. Anyone have any ideas? No one puts their hand up. The reason they'll put their hand up is because they're not really sure you mean it.
Or you put a suggestion box up.
Yeah, or you put a suggestion box, the most impersonal thing that we could do. What we need to be doing is walking by and saying repeatedly, I'm interested, I appreciate you, I know you have more to offer and give us, we need access to that. So I'm going to keep asking. And I'm going to trust that over time, if we build a relationship, that's going to come out.
I'm sorry, you just said something really critical to keep asking, because you can't just ask one time.
You cannot.
You might stimulate their thinking at that point, but they might not have the question for another month down the road.
Or it's like having an open door policy from the leadership, and then anytime somebody walks in, they get their head bit off.
That's right.
How long does that last?
That's right. Yeah,
it doesn't. It didn't last very long for me.
Well, I think that
was a joke.
There again, if we remember, we're humans. How do you form meaningful relationships with human beings? You do that over time. You don't instantaneously get access to the best of someone or their creative spark. You earn that through time and trust and building incrementally a relationship that allows that to come out. And why would we think our organizational life would be any different than that?
Speaking of over time and developing and building, where did you come into this leadership concept? I mean, did you study that in college, or was that somewhere in your adult career that you really started focusing on that?
I was 17 years old and a student at Carlsbad High School.
David, I'm going to interrupt you. We're going to hold
Perfect.
The thought right at 17. I love that. 17, that's a good age for a start of a story, right? I have no stories I can talk about at 17. David Berry is here, founder.
Well, you could, just not over there.
Not over the air. Rule13learning.com is the website. His book, A More Daring Life, Finding Voice at the Crossroads of Change. Get it on Amazon. This is Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Ken Huebner.
We'll be right back. Don't you dare go anywhere. I want to find out what happened at 17. Heaven up.
Doesn't sound like the Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
No, but it's a great version.
Yes.
I think I'm tearing up a little bit.
All right. Enough mushy mushy. Thanks for listening
usually
today.
It usually gets me with Lee Greenwood singing, you know.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. But this one's just as good.
I like that at the end. Just as good.
That's for Aaron and Katie.
Thanks for tuning in today. This is Ken Huebner. You're listening to us on ESPN 1700. You can also catch us on Facebook, though. I mentioned that earlier, but you can go to Facebook and go to Biz Talk Radio, and that's B-I-S Talk Radio. B-I-S is Believing is Seeing. For those of you that are following along.
No, your fans can tune in and see what you look like.
They can.
Yes.
I don't know why they would.
Because we have stories. No, you do know why. We have stories. Women like his voice. They do. And they get
disappointed.
Yes, I see. He's got that beautiful radio
voice. I believe it.
Yes. David Berry, founder of Rule 13 Learning. Thanks for coming in. Rule13learning.com is the website, and the 13 is the numeral 13, and the book, A More Daring Life. I love the title, and I love the subtitle, Finding Voice at the Crossroads of Change. We're talking about leadership, and I think Ken asked you what informed your move into leadership, and you started the story at age 17. That's always a good place to start.
At age 17, it was my natural inclination was to motivate and inspire through student government, leading pep rallies.
You were that guy.
I was that guy.
Wow.
I know.
I knew that guy.
I know. I was.
Every school has that guy.
I was that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were a handful of us. And
I wasn't that guy.
Oh, it was so much fun, and it was so gratifying. And you go to college and get out in the world, and it's a little bigger, a little bigger, a little bigger, and you're not sure how to be that guy. Where are the channels to plug, you know, or the places to plug into for that? So it took a little bit of time, but there was always this voice saying, there's something about that you need to reconnect to.
Do you know what that is? I mean, the spark that you just talked about, that you wanted to be a leader, was that, do you think that's biologic, or was that taught to you by your parents?
I think In my case, part of it was there was just always a real comfort with being up front and having the chance to influence. And when I noticed that the different ways I influenced could shape the tone, energy of a room, it really dawned on me that there's something you could do with that. And not only could I was I learning how to do that, but I thought over time, there are so many people who have the chance to influence who haven't necessarily thought about how to take advantage of that, how to enliven that in themselves, you know, so they can enliven other people.
We just had this conversation, Ken, earlier today about changing somebody's paradigm, because I always have this theory that if I want something changed, I have an effect on people.
Yeah.
I can change their paradigm. I can give them other information that allows them to make different decisions or in my thinking, better decisions. A lot of people don't believe that. They don't believe they have any power at all to influence or add value to other people's lives. So it's a reactionary life they live as opposed to a proacting.
I think so. I think it's why we need great bosses. I think it's why everybody needs a great mentor. The best thing one of my most important mentors said to me was, I can't wait for the day that you see yourself as I see you.
Hmm.
And I just hated him for it, because it meant that there was something I wasn't seeing. I wasn't there yet. I wasn't ready. But he persisted, and he not only said it, but he put an infrastructure, helped me put an infrastructure underneath to make it seeable, to make it visible.
Do you know what, did you guys define what he saw that you didn't, or was it more of a general look at the leadership capability?
No, what he saw was the same thing I saw in myself at 17.
Right.
But as an adult, with all of the pressures that come with that, was sort of shrinking into myself as opposed to bringing out in a bigger way. And he called it out and he said, you know, the guy that I hired really represented this, and that's what we need here. But you're opting for a fearful stance, a less certain stance, as opposed to the confidence and thoughtfulness that will actually make a difference and get other people excited about what we're trying to do.
You've worked with TaylorMade for how many years?
I was there for 7.5 years.
And that was as a corporate employee or consultant?
Correct. As a corporate employee. Yes.
So what you're doing right now is a consulting practice rather than working as an employee?
That's right.
I'm guessing you work with other companies too.
Absolutely.
Anybody you can talk about besides TaylorMade?
Callaway Golf is a client of mine currently.
A little
also
tiny golf company,
Carlsbad,
right?
A little tiny one, doing great things.
Yes.
I do a lot of work in consumer products, a lot of work with organizations who are creating great things and have a story to tell about those things and are trying to tell that story in a powerful way, starting with how they talk to one another in their organization.
So you cross out of just the leadership roles into things like brand management, because a company, if it has a mission or a brand or something, is that what you're talking about?
I'm not. What I'm talking about, Bob, is that if we can have the real, fuller, more meaningful conversation about who we are, it's going to be an awful lot easier for how we talk about what it is we're trying to create. But if this relationship isn't working, if we haven't defined what we care about, why it matters, and how to be in good relationship with us, then all the stuff we're trying to do is going to be fraught with all of the unspoken energy and all of the challenging things that we haven't worked through because we haven't declared a sort of a mature kind of leadership.
How in the world do you do that when you go into a company? Because everybody's going to have their own background. There may be cultural differences from international childhoods. How in the world do you come to that?
Well, I work with courageous leaders, and I think the courage at the outset is the most important marker for whether or not there's actual work that we can do together. I'm not about converting anybody. I'm about saying responding to people who say, I'm ready for growth. I know we've got to keep changing and evolving because there's nothing else. So can you help us activate that by being a facilitator of, an inspirer of, bigger conversations about what the heck we're trying to do here?
So you're not talking about people talking about at Callaway Big Bertha's, you know, the whatever. They don't even do Big Bertha anymore, do they? The driver? The Callaway driver?
It's
a different brand name.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Rogue is the newest product out on the market.
So you're not talking about getting the leaders to talk about the brand of the company. You're talking about something so much more, what's the word I'm looking for?
Culture?
It's cultural.
Well, we define the culture through the conversations that we have.
Right.
And so if we can sit together and have a real conversation about what's actually going on in this working relationship, then all of our product conversations are going to go that much more smoothly.
How do people usually receive you when you go in to do this kind of work? Do people understand what you're doing off the bat?
Absolutely, because intuitively human beings want to connect with one another. And so having license and permission and support for bigger conversations that actually get them connecting on substantive human issues is what makes creativity spark and all kinds of energy and enthusiasm come out.
Has the difference in working with baby boomers versus millennials versus Generation Xers, do you see a cultural difference in age to do this kind of thing, or is that...
The difference that I see is that the kinds of things I'm talking about were once thought of as luxuries, and now they're thought of as expectations. So when I work with students...
Microwave ovens kind of thing?
when I work with students at Cal State San Marcos, yes, and I talk about more meaningful relationships, coming together to have bigger conversations, they look at me like, yeah, of course, that's what we should be doing in organizational life.
David Berry, founder, rule13learning.com is the website, A More Daring Life, Finding Voice at the Crossroads of Change. David, thanks for coming in.
Absolutely,
my pleasure. We'll have to follow this along because we...
I hope we do.
Or we get the book, right?
You get the book.
You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Jennifer Ross and Style Your Life is up next. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Ken Huebner.
We'll be right back. Stay with us.